TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. Okay, go! Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take you with triple chopping, y'all. We're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those listening live on TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is.
Feel alive, Drew.
Feel alive. You feel alive?
No, you sound very monotone right now.
No, I'm just building up the anticipation. That's all I'm doing. And you'll hear from the birthday boy, Michael Remus, as we get as we move on throughout the show today. It is our, with the NHL returning next Saturday. Finally. The NHL returning next Saturday. Today is going to be our fantasy hockey preview. We'll deal with that in the last 2 hours of today's show. Our guests are Gus Katsaros. He's the pro scouting coordinator for McKean's Hockey. We'll talk all your fantasy forwards with Gus coming up at 1:15. 1:45 today, Jeff Angus, managing editor of Dauber Hockey. We'll talk fantasy defenseman with Jeff. And then at 2:30 this afternoon, from thegoalieguild.com, Justin Goldman is going to join us to talk fantasy goaltenders. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website for the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Richie, Ezzy, good morning. How you boys doing?
Good afternoon, in fact, actually.
That's but right. Good afternoon, I guess.
It feels like
point.
That because we were all waking up and to a blizzard and, you know, trying to get our cars out. Richie and I both got stuck in the snow, but you know what? I am absolutely ecstatic right now that we're going to be talking hockey. Obviously, the lockout ended Sunday, but we've got our usual fantasy hockey show, Richie, and I couldn't be happier because the lockout's over and, you know, life is good.
You passed over a major detail. Your car got stuck. You asked me to come
help you. I knew you weren't going to let that go, by the way.
You asked me to come help you. I got stuck once, and then I came and I tried to help you, and I went around the corner of your place, and I saw that you were already getting help, and then to try and come help you, instead of you telling me that you were okay and already done because you were out of the rut, I got stuck coming to help you even though you were already on your way to the studio. So just to qualify that, you asked me to help you and didn't tell me when you were already out. You weren't stuck anymore, and then I got stuck trying to help you when you weren't even there.
We'll deal with you guys and your driving issues at a later date and time, I think. The point is, you both made it here. We're very proud of you that you both made it here on time to the well,
we should have done like Timmy. Timmy cabbed.
Yeah, Drew took a limo.
Yeah. Always. You know, that's just how I roll, what can I tell you? Some breaking news from the NHL. Eric Fehr, formerly of the Winnipeg Jets, has apparently signed a contract with the Washington Capitals, his former team, a one-year, $600,000 contract for Eric Fehr. We had heard reports he was coming back from Finland to possibly join the team for a tryout during training camp. Yep. It is a one-year, $600,000 deal for Eric Fehr in Washington. Probably doing very much what the Jets tried to do with him last year, see if they can catch lightning in a bottle with a guy who is really, you know, trying to be polite when I say this, damaged goods.
They know him better than the Jets do. They have him at less of a risky number in $600,000. Is that a guaranteed contract, Drew?
You know, by the sounds of it, it is. They're not 100% clear on that in terms of what Stephen Wino first tweeted out the news. But I would think 1 year, $600,000 would probably.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it's not a two-way deal back down to the AHL by the sounds of it.
It's not a two-way then. You know, because you can have a two-way where it's $600,000 in the NHL and whatever it is in the AHL.
Right.
It has to be, I guess, below $100,000 now, as according to the new CBA. Eric Fehr, just quickly before we get into anything more interesting stuff, Eric Fehr obviously has damaged goods on both shoulders, but Eric Fehr, to be able to keep up in the National Hockey League, never, you know, needs to be able to pick up his foot speed. He's got a good shot, but his foot speed just isn't at NHL caliber. And the problem is if you make up for your lack of foot speed with physicality or at least angling people and keeping them away from the puck, and your shoulders are both bum shoulders, then you're really in trouble. So if he can pick up some foot speed, he'll be able to make up a little bit of what he lost, but it's going to be, I think, hard to reach the reach the levels he had reached before, because A, you need to stay healthy the whole season, and B, you need to have a certain amount of explosiveness, and I don't think he has either.
Yeah, Richie, hopefully he can get into some games for the Capitals. I imagine that he's going to spend some time in the AHL as well. But, you know, everyone remembers when he scored that goal in Winnipeg. He struggled big time last year. But hopefully he'll be able to prolong his NHL career a bit, because he lacks the physical play that used to make him kind of a two-way threat. But it's nice to see that he's got another NHL contract, because we weren't sure who he was going to sign with, because he obviously waited till now to sign.
Yeah, he'd performed well in Finland, you know, so good for him. Gets another shot. You know, yep. We'll see. It's, like you said, it's 1 year, $600,000 deal, so minimal risk, and, you know, you never want to, you know.
So first-round pick, Drew, I mean, he had a prolific career with the Brandon Wheat Kings, yeah. And the like you said, the shoulder injuries have really, you know, stunted his career. But, again, it's nice to hear a guy, a good Winkler boy, get another contract.
Absolutely. For those asking, we have not heard anything regarding the official ratification of the collective bargaining agreement. The results of the player ratification vote have not yet been released.
It's a mere formality, Drew.
It's a mere formality, absolutely. I mean, there's no question whatsoever that it's going to be ratified. But once that happens, and the memorandum of understanding, which apparently is still being worked on between the lawyers on both sides, we expect once those two things are announced, at that point in time, we will see the official release of the NHL schedule. We saw the leaked Winnipeg Jets schedule that came out yesterday. Let's start with that for the next 5 or so minutes. Anything on that Jets schedule that sort of jumped out at you? I mean, the thing that I saw is very rare that one team would play two games in two nights in the same city, like the Jets and the Capitals are supposedly doing, I believe, coming
March.
Up in March.
Yep.
Yeah, March 21st and 22nd, Thursday, Friday. It makes sense because Washington has to play a bunch of home games. I think they play three road games, in Winnipeg. You play on March 2nd, and they come back. So instead of making them fly three times all the way to Winnipeg, you make them fly twice, and they play two games. I think it makes sense in this situation with an intra-conference schedule. The one I found interesting is that Bob Seger's playing during the Leafs the Leafs game on March 12th.
That's hilarious.
If you look at the tweet that was sent, that was leaked on Carter Chen's Twitter page, you know, a buddy of ours, as it happens, somebody we know. So, I mean, the schedule, you know, we'll see the times and everything else as they come out. But, you know, pretty much standard. You know.
Well, what I was going to say, Drew, in all seriousness, I think the key to me is, and by the way, just so people know, the schedule posted online is missing three games, and I've been led to believe that includes, that's Tuesday at the Islanders, Thursday, I believe, at Montreal, and then Saturday home to Philly, I believe that is. And if that is the case, then what happens is you have one, two, three, four, you have about seven of your last games, are home games. So
that would be an opportunity for the Jets to make hay if they're still in the running at that point in time.
That's right.
But, I mean,
that means you're playing a lot of road games before that, and you could be far out. And I think that you have to also look at it from this way. And I've been saying this, and we're going to talk about it more in our season preview next week. But, you know, does it end up being that you play a lot more road games, you know, when guys like Zach Bogosian aren't back? You know, because right now you look at the schedule of the first, I believe it is nine or ten games, they're playing three of them at home.
That's right.
So is that when he comes back, and then are you already in a rut? So questions to be asked.
And there was a good article in today's Winnipeg Free Press where it was actually Tim Campbell, I think, caught up with John Paddock and talked to him about 94-95 in the lockout shortened year. And John Paddock said, you know, we started off, whatever they started off, 1-6-1 or 1-5-1, whatever the article said. And that was a rut they just couldn't catch up from.
Well, you know, I agree
that
with that.
That tie, by the way, was a 3-all tie against the Calgary Flames. That was the opening game of the 94 season, or the 95 season.
Well, it's funny, you know, what happened in 94-95, if you remember. I mean, you know, even though the schedule's leaked, that's most likely going to be the schedule. And even though there might be some changes, but like Richie said, you know, you've got a lot of home games in April at the end of the season, which is obviously good if the games are still meaningful. If the Jets are out of it at that point, I mean, it's not going to matter. But, you know, six of the first 10 games, according to the league schedule, are on the road. Six or seven of the first 10 are on the road. And it looks like they're, you know, the schedule is pretty road heavy in February. And obviously the Jets know this. Everyone knows this, and we're going to talk about it more and more as the season goes along. The Jets have to improve on the road, but Richie makes a good point when he brings up Zach Bogosian. I mean, we're not expecting him to be back until, you know, the end of February, somewhere around there. You know, it's too early to predict a date at this point. But in a 48-game schedule, it's an absolute sprint to the finish. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's going to be 48 games in 90 or so days, and you have to win, you know, games, you know, a lot of games in a short period of time. So even though the Jets, you know, could get off to a poor start, you know, because they have a lot of road games or this and that, it really doesn't really matter until you get into the meat of the season. And the most important part of the season is the end. And you mentioned 94, 95, but you remember the Quebec Nordiques were a good team and they got ousted in the first round and the Devils ended up winning. The Devils weren't really good in the regular season either. So it's going to be an absolute sprint.
A couple things to note here. You know, they play a couple back-to-back road games, which are tough. January 31st at Florida, and then Friday, February 1st at Tampa. You know, you say, oh, they're close in proximity. Sure, but traveling and playing back-to-back is hard in this the NHL. Mm-hmm. If you look also, they play Saturday at Philly on February 23rd.
I believe the article in the Free Press today said 7 back-to-back games.
More so the road back-to-back games, Drew.
Right.
Saturday, February 23rd at Philly, then Sunday, February 24th at Jersey. Again, close in proximity, but still tough. And then you have Thursday at Tampa, and then Friday at Florida, March 7th and March 8th. Mm-hmm. And then March 16th at Toronto, and then Sunday, March 17th at Ottawa. So again, the proximity is very close, but back-to-back games on the road are very difficult to win. Games are hard to win. Back-to-back games give you a lesser chance of winning. If you play back-to-back games at home, the second night, your home ice advantage is essentially wiped out if the other team isn't in the same situation.
Right. So, I mean, back-to-back games are certainly difficult. Also, I mean, you know, in addition, I mean, people always look at back-to-back, but you have to look at the 3 games and 4 nights aspect. Mm-hmm. Those are also very difficult. I mean, and probably, you know, as the schedule is going to be compacted, I think it's something like, 48 games in about 97 days or something along those lines. So a game every 2 days, you know, is pretty much what you're looking at for the rest of the season.
And 97 days, yeah, because you start on January 19th and it goes till April 25th.
I know it might sound cliche. I know, Drew, we're going to go to break right away, but if you're a good hockey team and you're on a roll, that's not going to be an issue. And I know that sounds kind of simplified, but last year it obviously was an issue. The Jets had so much trouble on the road, so many problems mm-hmm. in back-to-back games. But the good teams, I mean, you don't look at it like that. I mean, you got to win games, and if you're on a roll, you'll win those games. And if the Jets are having trouble in those back-to-back games, let's say they only win one or two out of those 6 or 7, there's more problems. The Jets, this is. Just like every other team, they have a lot to prove this year in a short period. There's a lot of guys that, you know, want to prove that they are worth the contracts. You know, talk about Pavlik or Kane. But there's going to be so many different storylines early on in the year, but they're going to have to get it done on the road. That's really what it's going to come down to, because we know that they were good at home. But, you know, the good teams will find a way to win those back-to-back games.
Agreed. Quickly, and this is just speculation on my part. According to this leaked schedule, the Jets are going to be at Boston on Monday, January 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Would not shock me if that was an afternoon game, because that's Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the United States. So that's a holiday. And on the previous schedule, the Jets were scheduled to be playing an afternoon game in Long Island. On that day. So watch out for that 21st, that game on the 21st. That could be an afternoon game. Hopefully we'll find out at some point during the course of the show if the schedule does come out while we're on air. We'll bring it to you here first on TSN 1290. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On TSN 1290, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, it was an early morning last Sunday, a good phone call to get to get on air for the announcement that the CBA had been agreed to between the NHL and the NHLPA. You know, let's start with the new CBA from the Winnipeg Jets perspective. You know, Mark Chipman came out and he had his press conference earlier this week, and he said that, you know, this new CBA should make the Jets more viable. You know, it'll help raise the Jets' profit margin. You know, do you think that this new CBA is going to have, you know, tangible impact on the Winnipeg Jets as an organization?
I think so, but if there's not a high Canadian dollar, there's not a new arena, there isn't a salary cap, the Jets never come back in the first place. And, yeah, in the new CBA, the salary cap is lower, and there's going to be more revenue sharing, but we know the Jets are going to make a profit. in that sense, I don't necessarily know, you know, that the new CBA is changing anything. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, Richie. The Jets have two very strong owners. David Thompson is very wealthy, well-respected businessman. Mark Chipman, obviously, we know what he's done with True North. You know, the Jets have a new arena. The arena is going to be sold out for 5 years. You know, things are good anyways. I don't necessarily know that the CBA is going to change any of that. I mean, the CBA, you know, for the owners, it's a way to, you know, control costs. And for the league as a whole, I look at the new CBA and I think it's better for the league. And it's going to be better for some of the teams that aren't making money. As far as, you know, if it's going to necessarily directly, you know, make the situation for the Jets better, sure, I guess they'll make more profit and all of that. But I think... I think you don't want to overestimate it. You want to be careful about that because the Jets, as we know, were a top 10 revenue team last year, and they're already in a really good position.
Rich?
You know, it helps the Leafs. Sorry, it helps the Jets, excuse me, because it's a 50-50 split, which means they make more profit immediately. Last year, Forbes estimated they made $13 million. And again, I think we've said this many times, but we don't know the exact details of hockey-related revenue, but there's a lot of money that True North is making that is, I assume, is not accounted for in hockey-related revenue. So they're now increasing their margins. Mark Chipman has said, for the most part, probably will invest that back into the product, whether or not that's players or the arena or whatever it may be. Fans obviously benefit from that. The Jets benefit from that. If the Jets can make money under the old format, then this system certainly does benefit them. I'm not as concerned about the long-term deals vis-a-vis the Jets, you know, in terms of teams trying to load up front-loaded deals because people have to remember that front-loaded deals like that still result in significant compensation in the way of 5 first-round picks.
Sure.
And there may be a player in the Jets that they don't think is even worth that.
You mean via restricted free agency?
Yeah, so the Jets may think that if, you know, if they're putting that much emphasis on the draft, that no player's worth the money that he'd be offered like that, and they would take 5 first-round picks for him. So in that respect, I mean, it helps them, but not as much. Overall, though, it increases their margins. It limits a little bit more of the movement. And I don't necessarily think that the contract length is going to be a great benefit to the Jets. I think the Jets, in a city that sometimes players don't want to play, even though I don't think that should be an issue, I've said it before on the show, you know, months ago, that the extra year or two on a contract may make the difference. So you can't do that anymore unless you're signing your own free agents. You can do that, but within the framework. You can't offer 9 years or 8 years if it's not your own free agent. But overall, the Jets are one of the teams, I'm assuming, were more than happy to, while losing a little bit of money for the first half of the season, if you estimated it about, you know, just under half, so a little bit less than half, so, you know, maybe $6 million, for example, just by the Forbes estimates. We have no exact figures. Well, you know, they'll make that up pretty quickly over the course of this new deal. So, and the franchise value goes up for Chipman and Thompson. People don't realize that the owners can sit out here a whole year, really. And if they get the deal they want, then their franchise value goes up and makes a difference.
Sure. I mean, their franchise value goes up strictly because their liability goes down. They're no longer on the hook for, you know, spending 57% of the CBA. But, you know, aside from some of the, you know, we have to study the last CBA after 2004-05 to, you know, understand the intricacies of it. This CBA is not radically different from the last one, with the exception of, you know, the hockey-related revenue number is now 50-50 as opposed to 57-43 in the players' favor. So there's no huge, you know, fundamental differences to the off-ice portion of the game here. So, you know, it's not like there's going to be a steep learning curve for us to analyze everything. It's, you know, there's some more, you know, restricted contracting rules. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think it's just the lack of huge overall change just goes to show you how sort of silly this entire lockout was from the get-go.
Well, coming out of the last lockout, there were two huge fundamental changes, salary cap and the age of free agency changed. And now that hasn't changed. And the owners wanted that originally, and, you know, they wanted no arbitration, and they wanted to change the entry-level deals and all that. None of that changed. I mean, it was strictly all about changing the percentage of hockey-related revenue. And there are obviously other changes, and, you know, there's the variance and, you know, limiting player contracts to a certain extent, but no, it's not that different.
The average hockey fan doesn't care about variance.
No, I mean, not at all, Drew.
You know, for the most part, the average guy who follows his team and, you know, might not be the you know, diehard passionate will never know that there's a variance rule in place.
Same thing with escrow. No hockey fan sitting there going, oh, I can't believe Sidney Crosby's going to have to pay this amount of money in escrow. Nobody cares about that.
And the thing about variance, if you look at the contracts that have been signed by the Jets, I mean, I think Ladd's at 4.4 every year in the deal.
Yeah, they haven't been in violation
of
the...
There are some escalators, but I don't think any of them are really in violation of variance.
The biggest difference in contracting, you know, between, say, salary cap hit and actual paid salary is probably Ron Hainsey this year.
Put it this way, Drew, do you think anybody cares?
I have to check, see what the money difference is, but yeah, he's making less than his cap hit is.
Yeah. The Jets have not been front-loading any long-term deals like that, you know, to any dramatic point in time. So that's probably not going to be an issue.
So, I mean, and of course, like what the interview that Gary did with Chipman in the paper this week, I mean, Chipman's not going to speak out against Bettman in the interview. We know that they're aligned. They know that he was part of the negotiations. And so I thought the interview was a typical interview. I mean, the answers were expected, I think.
Yeah.
I think you guys would agree with that. Good answers, but they were expected. I mean, you probably could have predicted what was going to be said.
Sure. The truth is, most of these, in 99% of these interviews, you can always predict what's going to be said.
Right, because there's only so much they're going to say on the record. I mean, I'm sure off the record there's different discussions between the two of them, but...
Yeah, or between any hockey people and anybody else whatsoever. But, the new CBA is signed. It's sort of hockey fans just, you almost have to sort of shrug your shoulders and say, okay, well, this was stupid, it took too long. But at least here we go. We don't have to talk about it much more.
Yeah, thankfully. I mean, every week we can disclose this now. Every week I'd walk out of the studio or wherever we were broadcasting the show and say, how the heck do we do that for 3 hours? I mean, there's when there's hockey shows, like when we're talking about planning this show, there's not enough time.
Yeah.
There's not even close to enough time. But those shows, I mean, how many more times can we talk about Donald Fear's haircut?
Exactly, or Gary Bettman walking up the escalators. No, I mean, everyone had to talk about that. The best thing is that it's over now, and that our reward, even though there was no positives about the lockout, but the reward is we're going to get this awesome 48-game season. We're going to have NHL hockey every single day of the week. There's going to be a Jets game every second day, essentially. That's the reward.
Are people overestimating the quality of the hockey that they're going to see over these 48 games?
Yeah, I mean, you have to remember, Drew, that you're going to be seeing goaltenders. Goaltenders that haven't played an exhibition game and haven't played a game.
So you're saying that you think the learning curve to get up to speed will be hardest for goaltenders?
My opinion is at least for the first couple of weeks, you're going to see more goals than you usually would because of two reasons. The first reason is I think a lot of goalies are going to be cold and rusty.
Mm-hmm.
I think that teams, for the most part, are going to be a little bit undercoached, and I think it's a good thing. A little bit more sloppy play. Generally, players,
they won't be able to play within the system that we always hear about.
A little bit more undisciplined, and the new coaches who are trying to put in new systems, whether it be Bob Hartley, who's an offensive coach, Bob and Adam Oates is as well, Ralph Kruger, wherever you're going to go for the new coach, Michelle Therrien, wherever you're going to go for new coaches, when they try and input a system, there's always a period where, and you saw it last year with Claude Noel here, the period where it gets a little sloppy and things get all haywire, I think goals will be higher in the first few weeks before the coaches rein the players in and they settle down. And the goalies get into prime shape.
And that goes to show you as a hockey fan how you really, you don't want players playing within systems.
The less time the players have to prepare in systems, the more exciting the games are.
Well, which is what we saw with, all the Philadelphia Flyers Jets games last year. There was no systems being played there. It was, it was old school, just go out and go hockey.
But it's like the Olympics or the World Juniors or whatever it may be. When you don't have enough time to really prepare, that's when generally you see the most exciting hockey.
Sure. And guys, I think that applies to both teams that have established coaches, whether it's Mike Babcock or even Claude Noel now going into his second year. You essentially have 1 week to get your stuff together. 1 week. That's nothing. And
short. Noel's on the ice right now. I mean, he might be advising. I don't know what it is. Yeah. But Sunday to Saturday.
Yeah.
And Saturday's a game day.
Less than a week.
You really have at most 5 days because, tomorrow, granted, they have been opened up that window of opportunity for any players that volunteer to take their physical ahead of time. So that's both sides have agreed to that if you're a player and you volunteer to take your physical, you can take your physical today as opposed to tomorrow. But if you're not or you don't volunteer or for whatever reason, that organization isn't ready to do the physical, scrap Sunday because that's your physical day. You got Monday through Friday and, fortunately the Jets aren't traveling, so you really have Monday to Thursday for a lot of these teams. You have 4 days of practice in order to get your system in place, and I think it's safe to say that no team can really establish what they truly want out of their system in only 4 days.
I'd agree with that. Coaches in this day and age love preparation, and they're going to have to do a lot of it on the fly this year. just the way it is.
It's like, you know, coaches love control. It's like Drew with the show.
And I hold on to it like with an iron fist. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
We were exploring opportunities to upgrade a lot of different positions. I believe that had we not been able to upgrade, I believe in James Reimer. I said that. And I think I'll be borne out on that one. But it's someone else's problem now. Clearly, goaltending was an issue here. Clearly. And it's not for lack of trying different solutions that we weren't able to solve it, but we weren't able to solve it. I still believe if James Reimer hadn't gotten hurt, it wouldn't have been an issue.
Brian Burke, former general manager of the Toronto Leafs, speaking to the media, the assembled media in Toronto for his first press conference since being relieved of his duties earlier this week. Let's start. You know, first of all, how surprised were you about this move? What do you think about the timing of the move? And is this warranted?
If you look at the overall tenure of Brian Burke in Toronto, it doesn't really surprise me. But, I mean, I don't think I'm alone in saying the timing of this is very peculiar. And you have to wonder what went on behind the scenes here. Because if the Leafs were well put together and a well-oiled machine, he would have been released from his duties prior to the lockout. Even though you're having somebody as the assistant GM step into the GM seat, who has been the GM before in Dave Nonis, you have to allow him to do his own thing, to put his own guys in place if there are other guys, to get to know the organization and get to communicate his vision to the organization. For some odd reason, to pull Brian Burke off of a plane or on his way to a plane to go to the Board of Governors meetings to allow him to go to the World Juniors in Ufa, Russia.
And that's how he started, for interrupting there, Richie. That's how he started this press conference today. He said, you know, he came in to the press conference, apologized. He said, I got sick in Russia. I wish they had told me this before I had to go there.
Well, and it doesn't really make much sense. And so they fire him. You know, something must have gone on. I know, obviously, Bell and Rogers now are controlling the board. And if you read more stories about this, I believe, the six-man board, which includes Larry Tannenbaum and Dale Lastman, I think the other four seats, as far as I could tell, are two but from Bell and two from Rogers, and I think that they've kind of forged a relationship there in terms of attempting to come to a consensus before and essentially having a majority. That's what I've read. I think Dave Schultz wrote about that. I don't know the exact details. But clearly, well, Bell and Rogers own 75% of the Leafs, MLSE, which includes the Leafs under that umbrella, and they made the decision that I think Brian Burke doesn't necessarily fit, but I do think something happened to finally set this off because the timing doesn't make sense. You don't fire a guy a week before the season and have your GM come into place now, your new GM come into place now, and, you know, you heard from Ton Anselmi that they were doing a search behind the scenes. Again, I don't necessarily believe that. And then they decided to go with Dave Nonis. Some people will tell you that they don't think Dave Nonis will be there after this year. So it's a big mess. It's a communications mess. Yeah. Something to me was a breaking point with Brian Burke. And you hear rumblings, off-the-record rumblings, and we don't know if any of those are true or aren't true. I'm sure there's some truth to some of them, and I'm sure some of them are completely bogus. But overall, this wasn't planned out beforehand. You don't fire somebody after the lockout. You give somebody the whole time, like John Davidson, to evaluate the organization. Even though Davidson was in St. Louis and not Columbus, and Nonis has been with the Leafs, you give him the opportunity to put a stamp on the organization. That's not during the season, a hectic 48-game season within 97 days.
Richie, it almost seems like this move was made, you know, in almost, it was like a rash decision. It was made very quickly. The timing, you know, you've already said it, but the timing stinks, and it's an awful time to do it, especially in a lockout shortened season. But, you know, there will be rumors that, you know, Brian Burke might have not wanted to give up too much for Roberto Luongo. It's way more than just Roberto Luongo. You're not going to fire a guy a week before a lockout shortened season just because he might not want to give up a prospect to get Roberto Luongo. It's funny. Richie mentioned Tom Anselmi in the press conference, and he was saying, you know, he's going to say, you know, we wanted to go in a different direction and all that, and we didn't want someone as vocal. And those are the. I mean, come on. I mean, it's something else here, and there is something else going behind the scenes. And if they didn't like him, and that's what it's really about, the board of directors really didn't like him. Well, why did you wait until now to fire him? Why wouldn't you have done that after the season? So something has happened that's much more than just a Roberto Luongo trade here.
You let him draft Morgan Riley, who apparently, by all accounts,
he was a good draft pick.
Very good.
I think that was a very good draft pick.
You let him trade for James Van Riemsdyk.
Good trade, too.
I agree on both
fronts. We hate on the Leafs a lot, Richie, on the show.
I agree on both fronts.
Because it's a Winnipeg rite of passage, but those were both good moves.
I agree. And the question is, why do you let the GM make those moves if you're going to replace him? You didn't have a plan to replace him. And then you decided to and tried to backtrack. And in this day and age, in that media center, you can't cover it up. I heard an interview with Todd Anselmi, and he couldn't really, he was pulling some punches. He couldn't say really what he wanted to say, what was the truth of what really happened.
He didn't look like a sincere guy.
No, I thought he was thrown out there to kind of do the dirty work.
Right.
Which is what he was.
Mm-hmm. You know, the timing is very peculiar. Another good line from Brian Burke's press conference is, wherever his next general manager's job is, he hopes the ownership doesn't change during his tenure. Because that's what happened in Vancouver. The ownership changed and he was let go, and that's obviously what happened in Toronto. Now, it's perfectly within the new ownership rights of MLSE to make that deal. But there's so much... The timing of it makes so little sense that you have to believe something behind the scenes happened. Yep. And if this is strictly about the Roberto Luongo, and I don't think it is, but if it is, just, you know, you guys, the new ownership can make themselves the general manager if they're going to dictate player personnel.
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, he makes the decisions at the end of the day, although you hear rumblings that the rest of the staff was on board with it. Well, I mean, I got to be honest with you. If the rumors of what the Leafs are, the Vancouver's asking for, I wouldn't do that deal.
Yeah, because they're talking about...
It's called a favor. You're doing Vancouver a favor. So Mike Gillis is a shrewd negotiator. But if I'm Brian Burke, and I've said this to you all along, all summer long, I know that there really, in fact, are no suitors for Roberto Luongo. I mean, the Flyers randomly come up, so they're going to pay Brizgalov allegedly 2/3 of his salary to go away and then take on Luongo's contract.
Absolutely not.
The Flyers have done crazy things, so you never know, but I don't buy it. Chicago, I don't see it. So the truth is, Florida, well, they have Markstrom. They don't seem to really be that interested, even though he wants to go there. When you know that Vancouver doesn't want the distraction and he's got nowhere to go, you don't give up anything. And he's got a bad contract. I don't care if the salary cap does go up. He's got a contract. It's long. It could be a penalty. It could be a penalty as per the new CBA. There's some risk involved with it. Never mind the media center and the pressure. You don't give up Kadri. I don't even like Nazem Kadri as a player that much, but if he ends up being a 20-goal scorer, you're giving up something. And obviously, Jake Gardner, that's apparently the rumor they asked for both. I wouldn't give either in a separate deal. Doing them a favor.
Quickly cut in here, what they're saying now is that for someone to take Luongo, they might have to actually throw in a defenseman. So they might have to throw in Keith Ballard. That was reported earlier this week.
But they don't want Keith Ballard, as he's got a bad contract, too. He's busted.
It's to your point, though, I agree with you. There aren't a lot of suitors for Luongo, and you're going to have to make it very sweet. And in fact, Vancouver's asking for a lot. We know that.
They're playing the game. And you'd hope, and I know that Luongo's been acquired by Nonis, and he's ended up being a really good acquisition for Todd Bertuzzi. Okay? I know that.
Yep.
Different situation, different time.
He almost won them the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, by the way, I think...
But the contracts were different. I mean, you can't compare apples. That's not comparing apples to apples when you talk about Roberto Luongo, you know, being acquired 6 years ago or however many years ago it was versus Roberto Luongo nowadays.
To me, Drew.
And I think he's still a good goaltender.
I do, too.
And to no fault of his own, Vancouver decided to give him a lousy contract. Yep. And then the environment in Vancouver has been relatively poisoned as it relates to Roberto Luongo. He hasn't been given a fair shake, and so he does need a change of scenery. But, you know, if I'm Roberto Luongo, it's not my fault that you guys gave me this huge contract.
Here's some knocks on, you know, I think the Luongo one's more of a cover-up than anything else. I mean, it might have been a small factor, but it's not the main factor. Let's talk about this. I mean, you hear rumblings about Brian Burke, and clearly his bombastic personality wasn't something that was playing well with the board, and apparently at a meeting with the board, and he wasn't giving them necessarily the answers they wanted to hear.
He said
all those may be factors. I don't think, again, those meetings, though.
Burke's not a yes man.
Those meetings happened a long time ago. So why didn't you get rid of him then?
Well, and you knew who Brian Burke was when you bought the
that's
franchise.
Right, that's right.
You know, he's not going to change. He said that in his press conference. You know, he said, here's the quote. I'm not changing. I'm not going to change how I do things. That's not possible. I'm Irish. I'm stubborn. Going to find someone who likes that brand, I guess. That's Brian Burke's quote. You knew that from the get-go.
Now,
if you didn't like him then, you know, get rid of him. You know, we see it happen in the NFL all the time. You see it happen in the Cleveland Browns. New guy comes in, he buys the team, he dismisses the coach and the general manager. That's his prerogative. He wants his own guys in there.
But what they do there?
They did it at the right timing. They did it as soon as the day the season ended, that guy knew he was going to be out of a job, and he was.
And they didn't keep one of his right-hand men as the successor.
Well, that's the interesting part. I mean, and you know, certainly, I mean, Dave Nonis is also not a yes man. He's a good hockey guy.
And I've always said that I thought he got...
He probably doesn't get enough credit.
Well, I thought he got a raw deal in Vancouver in that he had basically managed that team into salary cap flexibility the summer. He was going to have some money to spend. And whether it would have been on the Sedins or Gabrick or whoever it may have been.
Well, you sent us this article, and this is an article from the original illegalcurve.com back in, 2007, 2008?
That article's from 2009 or 8.
What the article said was Dave Nonis got fired because he wasn't selfish. You know, he wasn't going to sacrifice the long-term flexibility and viability of the Vancouver Canucks back in 2007 for his own benefit. So he was fired for not being selfish.
Exactly. And what happened was he had all the flexibility, and then they fired him, and Mike Gillis came in, and he had all the flexibility to go and kind of do what he wanted to do. I forwarded you another article I wrote about Vancouver itself, and this is kind of getting into the evaluation of Dave Nonis. And it's actually interesting. It's very interesting to look at the Vancouver roster. I'm not sure if you're pulling that article up, Drew. The Vancouver roster and who really compiled the talent there. And if you had to say one guy is responsible for how good the Vancouver Canucks are now, ironically, it'd be Brian Burke. Yeah.
The article is from 2008.
Think about all of the feeder system from the Manitoba Moose to the Vancouver Canucks. It was all between 2001 to 2005.
And they haven't drafted well since, but for the most part, you have guys like Edler and such. But hear me out here, guys. I mean, you look at Vancouver. And Dave Nonis did some nice things. He signed Roberto Luongo. He brought in some other guys. But you can pull up that article, Drew. But
I got the article up.
Okay, so if you look at the roster for the most part is Sedins and Kessler. And those were all under Burke's watch. Yep. Now, that doesn't mean Burke was directly responsible. Burke was directly responsible for the Sedin move. He really made a lot of hay doing that.
He made the trade to get into that position.
And his scouts, obviously, are part of the Kessler deal. He has to rubber stamp it, probably. But overall, I mean, that's still the core of the team.
Yeah.
And if you look at Mike Gillis, actually, he hasn't added that many players who've been that effective.
Well,
that's
if you look at Mike Gillis's acquisitions, most of you can see, you know, David Booth last year, not good. The defense has been a problem. They keep going through sort of these defensemen that they pay big ticket money for.
Keith Ballard,
you mentioned. Jason Garrison is a big acquisition this offseason. We don't know how that's going to work. I mean, there's certainly been some moves that can leave you questioning Mike Gillis's decision making. Chris Higgins has been very, up and down. He gave Roberto Luongo that contract at a time when goalies didn't have very much leverage.
And he's put himself in a situation where he is either forced to trade him or forced to have a very good goalie as your backup.
Yeah.
So I agree. His record hasn't been good, and Richie's point is well taken. Brian Burke built the team to a situation where it almost won the Stanley Cup.
And it's ironic again. It's really interesting if you look at Brian Burke's track record.
And now he's leaving when the Leafs are actually on the up. Yeah. The Leafs are only getting better.
Well, I mean, you can't get worse. That's one thing, though.
Yeah, exactly.
But and the trade of Kessel is the one that cost him. But if you I don't want to gloss over that necessarily. But if you look at Anaheim, it's kind of the opposite, really. I mean, he brings in Niedermeyer as a free agent,
and Pronger falls in his lap.
And Pronger, sure, he falls in his lap to a point, but it's kind of similar and kind of opposite, in that in Anaheim he kind of took over Brian Murray's talent base. And then one, whereas, and he's still responsible very much, Brian Murray, for the talent that's there, whereas Burke kind of in Vancouver. So GM tenures, they signed Chevalier up to a 5-year deal here because GM tenures are hard to evaluate in short pockets. Brian Burke was coming into his, I guess, official fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been a shortened year, but...
To get rid of a guy, I mean, Ken Holland in Detroit says the minimum time you can give a general manager to evaluate him is 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's minimum. And he says ideally it's 10.
Ideally it's 10. Nobody's going to give you 10 generally unless you're Ken Holland. But, 6-year deal. Also, they're eating big money here, Drew.
Sure.
6-year deal, $18 million.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is, 6-year, 18, I believe it was for Burke. So
they're taking some money. They're going to take a hit on that. I mean, and also
but people will tell you, as I said before, sorry to interrupt you, Drew, that Nonis won't be in the job next year. We'll see.
I mean, another interesting note from the press conference today, quickly before we go to break, is that Brian Burke thought he was going to be a senior advisor to hockey operations. He's not. Nothing to do with hockey operations whatsoever, which tells me the Maple Leaf is just telling him to go sit on your couch and we won't see you here.
And that's exactly right, because Burke, if you listen to originally the article, I believe, written by Damian Cox, that he thought he'd be of a role in overseeing and helping Dave Nonis, more so helping than necessarily overseeing what he was doing. And then if you read the other articles, they say he has no, as you just said, no input in hockey operations.
You've got to think, why did they give him that position then?
Well, cause he suggested it, apparently.
To keep him on the, because, you know, they can...
Well, he looks for another job.
Yeah, they'll keep him on the payroll.
He's on the payroll anyways.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's on the payroll anyways, but he's not free to go talk too much or anything else. He's, you know, still an employee. And when the next job comes around, he'll be able to talk to them about it without any problem.
Before
we go to break, I think it's important not to gloss this part over regarding Brian Burke. His most enduring legacy as general manager of the Ducks, the Canucks, or the Leafs, it's his fight to rid homophobia from hockey and society. And for that, I think he does deserve the utmost of praise.
Yep.
Agreed.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty can be reached at 230-6129. One more time, David Carr of Monopoly Realty for all your real estate needs, 230-6129. We're going to get into fantasy hockey coming up at the top of the hour. That's how we're going to spend the last 2 hours of today's program. A lot of people asking us on Twitter. We have not had this confirmed by True North, but we do hear that it is likely that tomorrow's practice is going to be open to the public from 12 noon until 1 p.m. We don't have any other further details along that line, probably because they can't release them until the CBA is officially ratified by the NHLPA and the Memorandum of Understanding is agreed to. But we do understand, you know, not completely confirmed, don't know the details, that it will be an open practice for at least an hour during tomorrow, tomorrow at the MTS Center. If and when we get more information on that, we will certainly pass it along to you, our loyal listening audience.
Yeah, Drew, we were talking about this off air, but for, you know, some people don't know that, you know, former NHLer JP Vigier has been running all the practices because Claude Noel can't practice with the team right now. So today there's another practice at, I believe, 4 o'clock at MTS Center. They've been practicing since Wednesday, but tomorrow could be the first practice where Claude Noel is actually running, you know, running things. Training camp starts. So, and that would be great for hockey fans if they could go down there, but I guess we'll, as you said, confirm it later.
Yeah, we will confirm it when we are able to do so. Richie, let me ask you this question. There's a number of players who are restricted free agents still, and the season is really 6 days away from now. You know, P.K. Subban and Jamie Benn are at the top of that list. I believe Michael Delzato of the Rangers is also on that list.
And they're about $500K apart, apparently.
Okay, so
per year.
Per year.
So Kulikov, too?
Yes, Dmitry Kulikov on the Florida Panthers. They're a promising young defenseman there in Florida. How do you see those four guys resolving their contract impasses? And do you think it happens prior to the start of the season?
Yeah, I do. I mean, those players are just too important to the cause for those teams. Jamie Benn is, you know, your number one center in Dallas. You have P.K. Subban, who's your number one defenseman in Montreal. Michael Delzato is not your number one defenseman there, but he's arguably your number one offensive defenseman in New York. Dmitry Kulikov has a large effect in skating and puck movement on Florida's back end. All those teams can't afford to be with all those players for a significant period of time.
Yeah, those guys are all going to get signed very shortly.
And the question,
tough contracts. Those are all tough contracts, though, because P.K. Subban apparently wanted 7 years.
But before you start, I don't know what the rule was. The old CBA, you had to sign a player, I believe, an RFA by December 1st, didn't you?
I don't remember.
That was the rule, so I'm not sure what the rule will be in a shortened season, but anyways.
Yeah, well, that's, I guess, I'm assuming that there won't be any problems and that these guys will all get signed in due time.
Like, would you expect that as soon as that pretty much the deals are pretty close to done for these guys and that as soon as we get the official ratification of the CBA that, you know, it'll be all systems go for those players?
If the GMs,
we know that they, you know, probably officially can't have those conversations, but you know, we all know that those conversations still happen behind the scenes and everything else.
I do, Drew. I do think, to answer your question, I do think that these deals are just a matter of putting, you know, ink on paper. And if they're not, then, you know, probably the guys aren't going to get signed because training camp's starting. Like we said, you have a week to get the season going. So you'd have to think that all of these contracts are just waiting to, you know, to be signed and delivered.
You would expect so. What about trades? You know, who are some trade candidates that you can see coming up?
Well, there are rumors that a lot of deals have kind of been quietly negotiated and that there's going to be a huge amount of movement in the next few days. I don't know if that's true or not. That's really hard to tell and hard to predict. Yeah, Drew, there'll probably be trades maneuvering in terms of the cap. I don't think any team's actually under the cap right now, so I'm not necessarily needing to boost up contracts. But, you know, if there's a buyout in a trade or if there's a buyout movement, I guess the buyouts won't be till after the year, excuse me. So really the issue then is your own free agents, and if there are any trades, aside from a guy like Luongo, you hear a lot of rumors about making a trade right now and getting a guy into your lineup, and it's going to be a little bit hectic. I feel like, don't the GMs take a little bit of a look at their rosters before they make a move? Like, why wouldn't they have made the move before September 15th?
It's a good question because, it shouldn't be. It's not salary cap related for this season, at least. So there is no, besides maybe internal team salary caps, but we don't know about that. But there isn't a pressing issue, in terms of getting under the cap to make a move. So you would think you'd want to see your team perform, you get 20, you almost get 20, 24 games, get to take a look at it. And then if you want to do something, you can do it at the deadline, or you can do it, in next June, next July, when the off season starts again.
Yeah, exactly. The question you ask yourself is, what's really changed between September 15th and now in terms of these trade negotiations? Well, obviously things have changed in terms of the CBA, but how applicable is that to this year? And are teams going to start dumping salary now, or do they wait to dump salary in the off season with the ability to buy out and with the ability to trade then? And what the people have to understand too, when you're in the off season, you have a lot more flexibility in terms of the cap and what you're going to do, because you can even go over the cap and then get back under it before the season begins. So there are, and I assume that rule will remain the same under the prospective CBA, which we believe will be ratified today. So there may be a flurry of movement. I don't necessarily expect that flurry of movement. You'll see a couple moves. I'm not sure how significant
they will
be.
I think there will be a couple. Richie, I think there's going to be a few moves. And, for people listening out there, don't expect, if you're expecting Roberto Luongo to be traded in an 8-player blockbuster, you might be disappointed. It might happen. Who knows? But
never know.
I don't expect a lot of moves. It's like you said, everybody knew. I mean, Ryan Miller came out and said this himself. Everybody knew there was going to be a half-season lost minimum. All the GMs knew that. I don't think GMs have these trades that they're just waiting to unleash right now. So,
boy, if you want to go the Brian Burke hazing, just go to Al Strachan's Twitter page. Dave Schultz tweets: quick word about before ducking out to write CBA. Burke's friends among NHL GMs and governors as shocked as he was. Al Strachan writes, both of them, question mark.
Tweet from Darren Dreger: MOU is still in the works, quote unquote, should get done today. Over 100 hours invested in legal work and counting this week alone. Coaches are very eager. Bob McKenzie along the same topic: no one seems to know precisely when the NHL-NHLPA MOU will be signed. Other than expectation, it'll be, quote unquote, sometime today.
So that's nothing new.
That's nothing new. So we continue to wait and see. And if it happens in the next 2 hours, you'll hear it first on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. When we come back, we start talking fantasy hockey. Your hockey pools are probably coming up this week. You get all the information first. Who to draft, who to avoid. It's fantasy hockey time on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.